Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much, Aaron. It's interesting, as a day progresses around a similar theme, it's perhaps no accident that things start to be convergent rather than divergent. Michael was talking earlier today about the application experience, the on-campus experience, the academic experience, and the post-delivery, if you like, the employability, the alumni. And these are aspects of the work that, or the foci that we've been drawn into in looking at what a student value proposition might be like at Sunderland. The Manchester Met story was very strong too, I thought. A huge message there about the academic infrastructure having to deliver. So there's no room for a lot of loose ends around that story, it seemed to me. Quite technically driven, quite technologically driven, very bold and very admirable. Interesting also that we're moving away from some of the conventional platforms. We are about to make the journey from WebCT to a unique system designed by Pearson for us, which will include Equella. And it's interesting how that market's starting to move into new territory away from Blackboard, WebCT, and dare I say, Moodle. I'm going to talk to you about how we've conceived and have started to manage the notion of a value proposition at Sunderland. It's by no means a complete story. We're doing this because we know we need to have much more confidence in the public offer and the public expressions of commitment that we're making to potential students as well as to existing students. So why are we using the language of value? The point's been very heavily made today, I think very well made. We heard a tremendous amount about the KIS statements and about the other aspects of the accountability framework which are guiding our thoughts towards 2012. I find it interesting to reflect that these realities are very pressing, perhaps, to the people in this room and to many of my senior colleagues in the university. I wonder just how widely shared these pressures and implications are to the mass, for example, of our academic colleagues. I think those who are particularly active, who read the press, engaged in union activities perhaps, or engaged with some aspects of university committee work, understand these things very well. I wonder how well understood and owned the messages of the 2012 move are in the generality. Is it something that we need to talk more about in our universities, or should we just assume that everybody has got the point? There have been stages in the journey we've gone on in trying to re-energise our academic proposition where colleagues have said, is this something to do with the fees in 2012? Well, the short answer is yes. It is in small part to do with that. I like to think it's the catalyst and the stimulus rather than the be-all and end-all. The notion of a value proposition, which has been sculling around our media for a little while now, very hard to define. It can be defined very specifically in terms of specifics that you undertake to deliver. Terrible language, the language delivery, I know. Things that you intend to deliver to intending new students, existing students, or it could be a generalised set of propositions which, if you like, are a gloss on your being and your essence as a university, and of course everything in between. I suspect if we plotted our definition it would be an interesting spectrum from the soft to the hard, and how much of it is in fact part of what we've always called branding. And I want to come back to that branding proposition later. As you go along that journey of trying to re-examine and gain more confidence in your academic offer, you're also aware that nothing is cheap. I think one of the interesting sotto voce stories of this year, and I do mean this year, our year 2011 to 2012, is that I suspect everybody in this room who's associated with the university is in an institution which has a worse per capita, if I can use that term, budget than it had the previous year, because the late tinkerings with the formula and the allocations, as you know, left many people fairly impoverished and some quite impoverished and a few not very impoverished at all. But there were adjustments to our funding for this very year, let alone looking forward to the impact of differential fees and new fee structure for 2012. So that there's always that thought that if you're going to do something serious, it's going to cost you money, and is it going to be an as well as or an instead of? And of course there are dangers in going wholesale down a path of investment in the light of poor strategic knowledge. Let's talk about the explicit and the implicit. If you have a proposition for new students, and several of our contributors have referred to this already, how much of this proposition is auditable and upfront? How much of it is about specific promises? We've talked about accountabilities at various points today. We've talked a lot about league table accountabilities, but we've just started, Sean's taken us into that territory, to talk about legal accountabilities. And one of the faculties I'm looking after at the moment, who's something of a legal, is bending my ear every week about the potential legal accountabilities which we could face if we start to stand by certain specific aspects and claims in a student value proposition. So that's, I think it's very important that we're working in territory which we're comfortable with, and we're not going to just create for ourselves another set of problems a year or two down the line. And then if we are starting to review our offer and gain comfort in standing by the propositions we make in our offer, is it an offer which is about everything we do? We're overwhelmed by the reality of the home EU undergraduate experience, but we have very many other kinds of students in most of our universities. In our university, for example, we have a tremendous amount of transnational education, which has a whole other rhythm to it. How much of what we are proposing as a value proposition applies to all of our students, to our part-time students, to our off-campus students, to those students who never even come anywhere near the campus but are somewhere else in the UK, in the various partnerships and modes that we have. Not least our students in other settings, particularly overseas. Is what we are claiming as the fundamentals of a student experience, well, for example, we have a very large pharmacy school at Sunderland, one of the largest in the country, for a pharmacy student who comes from down the road, say Peterlee or Teesside, are we making the same proposition to them as we are for somebody who comes from Egypt to do a four-year M-Pharm with us at Sunderland? These are very real questions when you start to put down on paper in a much more specific way what you intend to offer. So there's a spectrum there. A value proposition can at one end be relatively bland and be little more than a branding exercise. At the other end, it can be explicit and auditable with all that that entails. In looking at this, we realised very early on that we always had a value proposition, but it was spread around a large number of different vehicles, statements of expectation, as I've called them here. Some of them were things we said on the website, some of them were things we said at open days, some of them were part of our marketing, some of them were part of our television advertisements. And one consistent message that we've given over the last few years through media specifically is this notion of a life-changing university, which is still our fundamental proposition. Some of our proposition was very local. We're a university that recruits extensively from a region and even a sub-region. And part of our proposition has always been about local responsiveness, about the right kind of programme, about the professional and other employment links that go along with that, about the quality of teaching. But bearing in mind also that we are in a region with the highest unemployment in England and Wales. What we're saying about employability and about the power of our portfolio in addressing that employability challenge is set against the context of a very tough economic context and very tough employment basis. But also, and perhaps more powerfully, the realisation as we came to grips with this re-evaluation was that our proposition was not a coherent basis for planning, for development and monitoring. It was very, or relatively, weakly evidenced. So we've come to a form of words which we're using largely internally, and the form of words is the Sunderland commitment. It's not part of a marketing message, it's not in our television advertisements, it's not even on our website, but it's a very powerful internal process which is driving our re-evaluation of our academic offer at the moment. And it's built around the obvious things, supported by things that people have said today, supported by research that's conducted by Million Plus, which we're members of. And it will not surprise you to know that the touchstones of that commitment are around the right programme, the portfolio, if you like, quality of teaching and learning experience, the employability attached to that programme, and the support, responsiveness, the added value, if you like, that we can attach to that. Alongside that, and I'm not going to go into tremendous detail about how we're doing that, because it's largely about committees and people and task groups and working parties and very familiar territory. But I do want to show you this, without showing you necessarily any of the words on this, and just illustrates one of the pitfalls. It's what I call the Volvo wiring diagram paradox. And you've all done this. You get to the point where some brave soul decides to map out. This particular wiring diagram is a map of how we're moving forward under one of these strands on employability and added value. So, for example, in green, it starts out with activities. Our futures programme, which is about career guidance, masterclasses, mentoring, CV development, and all that sort of thing. A volunteering strand, an extracurricular strand, a student enterprise strand, internships and placement strand, and then facets of academic programmes strand. That all comes together, green down here, in a record of engagement, which can be part of a professional award, can simply be a record of engagement, and so on and so forth. It's very easy to get lost in the complexity of some of these things, and as I was saying a couple of minutes ago, very important to remember, we have to carry along hundreds of academic colleagues on this journey. We can't afford to overcomplicate. Some of us are very familiar with this Volvo wiring diagram territory. I have to say, not many are, and it's very easy to get lost in the morass of detail. Stick to the simple and effective things. So those are the strands of our commitment, and they do contain a lot of added value elements, which were weakly evidenced before, not terribly well organised, not terribly put together, and it's the bringing together of these strands that represents what we've called the Sunderland commitment to underpin those brand statements. But this is insider language. This is the language which academic colleagues, senior service staff and senior staff of the university are using to describe what we're doing. The brand remains the life-changing brand. And then when you set out to make that all happen in a coherent way, it's what I've called here the Hargreaves paradox. Those of you familiar with the work of David Hargreaves, who made that extraordinary journey from Manchester University to Oxford to Cambridge via a spell running London schools in the early 1990s or late 1980s. He was one of the first people to write persuasively about educational planning. And part of his writing, I can't remember which exact reference, but he adduced a taxonomy of educational planning, and it was about stages of maturity. The very high stage of maturity, educational planning, was all about actualisation and the realising that the process was the thing and all those tremendous things. But I'm always taken by his description of the lowest stage of maturity in educational planning, which he described as feeling pleased with yourself because you've got a nice document. And that really is part of the trouble, isn't it? In trying to revitalise, reinvigorate and re-energise our offer and our confidence in that offer, there was a great danger in producing nice documents and putting them on the shelf. But you have to do it. So some of the sub-elements of what I'm describing here have included, for example, an extremely disciplined process of portfolio review, whereby we've started to benchmark the whole portfolio against these wider claims we're making under this commitment banner around the right programme, the quality of teaching and learning, the recency of the renewal of the teaching and learning methods, how long since you looked at the assessment model and so on and so forth. So there's an extremely disciplined portfolio review process which involves a degree of benchmarking internally and externally, a whole raft of learning teacher initiatives, many of which I'm responsible for myself, and they include initiatives around peer activity, peer observation, which I know has been with us a very long time, but you have to re-energise it periodically. You can't just assume it's happening. A very, very powerful role for our student union. All our working groups around the Sunderland Commitment are co-chaired by members of the student union executive. So I have a co-chair on one of the four groups which I lead, who is the student learning officer for the student union executive. And we felt it very important too that all the work streams associated with this process were led at a very high level, at least at the level of dean or senior administrator. And then you get into territory which is much harder to define, which I think is terribly important. If you're using this language of commitment and renewal of the offer and trying to evidence it better and be very clear what you mean when you talk about opportunities for volunteering, opportunities for placement, opportunities for being involved in charitable work, whatever it may be, very important that that language and those processes start to feature in everybody's leadership agenda, not just people who are running a little work stream or chairing a task group or whatever it may be. The discipline to make sure that vice chancellors, deputy vice chancellors, deans, as well as lecturers, senior lecturers, are actually talking about these things. And there are barriers to cross here. For all that we have a sophisticated dialogue around learning and teaching development in our sector, and it has been very sophisticated in recent years, not least due to the work of the HEA and others, I would suggest to you that there are still whole areas of unexamined practice, of continuing habits which go back quite a long way in a profession that does not renew itself very often. Turnover in our profession is relatively low. Some quite ham-fisted attempts at working with things like peer observation of teaching, which have resulted in defensive strategies and compliance as opposed to progress. There's something still I would suggest you to demystify there, and the more we go into this, I think the more we understand that this is about leadership at every level, and it is not just about policies, process, and compliance. Moving, for example, from having a peer observation framework with forms to fill in to a culture in which peer attack on the core transactions of teaching and learning is a normal thing, a normal expectation, a normal behaviour, where it's part of academic intercourse, that's quite a journey to make. And then the realisation also, a series of realisations here, that it's not enough to move on with your commitment statements and understand what they mean and do them better and put some muscle behind them. You've actually got to harmonise that with some of your academic management processes, such as annual review and monitoring, periodic review, revalidation, new programme development, and other routine renewal academic renewal processes. Your whole quality assurance framework needs to reflect what you're doing as part of a student value proposition. It can't be pointing in another direction. It's got to harmonise with it, and there's a huge agenda there. So where are we trying to go with this? In summary then, a more coherent proposition for our intending students and our university partners, a much more secure hinterland for our public statements, for anything that we put out to the world and our student-facing narrative. Very importantly for us too, a framework for academic planning and portfolio review, so that it's looking inside at our academic management processes as well as outside at our students, resulting, we hope, and a much higher level of confidence in what we do.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.